for this evening's talk. I did get an email from a monk who asked me to give a talk on this topic. So because it was a monk's request, it's very hard to refuse. He said he'd scanned about 850 of my talks online. I thought, oh my goodness, is that so many talks online? And he said they couldn't find anything about this subject. It's amazing, 850 talks, and I haven't talked about this one subject. So he asked me, can you please give a talk on listening? Which is an interesting thing, because when I'm talking, I can't be listening. That's why he hasn't found any of... No, it's only a joke. But it's such an important part of learning to live in harmony with other people, to listen. It's also an important part to understand oneself, to be able to listen. It's one of the things which is improved when one learns how to be mindful and really aware. And as that awareness gets stronger and stronger, one can listen much more attentively, more fully. One literally hears and understands more. And of course, then one learns how to listen to the world rather than always talking back at the world, before you get all your wisdom and understanding, and especially when you start to listen to yourself and listen to your mind. And that's where you really get into fun stuff. So that's a little preview about what listening can do. But we start in the ordinary ways of learning how to listen to each other. You know that whenever we keep talking, we get into arguments, but when we listen, we become wise. So which one do you really want to do? Do you want to be a talker or a listener, someone who's really wise? It's just part of our training as monks that we learn how to sit still for hours without talking at all. And I remember when I first came to Australia, having had 9 years of training, of learning how to sit quietly, and being number two monk, and the monk who was my senior, he would give all the talks on a Friday night. I would just sit there, even afterwards when people would ask questions, they'd ask questions of him, and I would just sit there. And after about 4 or 5 months, he went to Thailand to have a break, so I had to give the talk. And as soon as I started speaking, this young girl, maybe 13 or 14, came up to me and said, "That's amazing! You can talk! I thought you were brain damaged." That's what she said. Because just because I didn't talk, she thought I was, you know, somehow mentally deficient. Isn't it a shame that we don't respect silence, that we only respect talking? And it's one of the reasons why we aren't good listeners, but we're good talkers, because we have developed the ability to express ourselves very much. We learn that in school. We learn that in many other parts of life, to express, to present, to actually to convey our feelings to others. But can we be someone who receives what others convey to us? Can we really listen? And you should know that we miss so much in life when we're too busy talking and not listening. And it's because of our training. What you do here before the talk starts, that degree of meditation, is where you learn how to listen very, very deeply. A long time ago, I recognized that, and I called it total listening. Because you recognize that when somebody is talking to you, so often you're only half listening. And probably you're paying more attention to the conversation which is going on inside of you, that inner chatter. So much so that you really don't pick up what other people are trying to tell you. You know, the old thing about your husband, your wife saying, and they start to talk to you, and you start thinking, here they go again. Why do they keep saying the same old thing? I've had enough of this. Don't they know that I'm tired too? I don't want to need this. I don't need this now. And already, just they've only started, and you've already got a conversation going on between your ears, which you're paying much more attention to than what they're saying. You can't listen. Or people are fantasizing or dreaming. I remember somebody passed me a copy of Time magazine many years ago where they did some research that people who listen to public talks, they found out 95% of them are thinking sexual fantasies rather than listening to the speaker. I hope that's not going on here. But that just shows how much attention people are paying to what's actually going on, because, you know, in their world, their fantasy world, it's much more fun than listening. That's why you have to tell jokes every now and again to keep people paying attention to you. But you can understand why we miss so much. So when we're meditating, you realize that this inner voice, this inner chatter, is what causes you to be unable to listen. So we have all these little techniques about how to be quiet. Present moment awareness is very important, because in the present moment, basically, there's nothing much to talk about. If you really get in the present moment, much of the busyness of life is taken away from you, which means it's much easier to be silent. And what we're doing in meditation, we're learning how to listen, especially to our body at the very beginning, to listen to all its feelings. I often tell people the reason why people get sick, it's not they suddenly get these sicknesses or cancers or heart disease or whatever. It's growing over many months, maybe years. And the body often tells you that it needs you to sort of relax, rest, or do whatever, exercise, whatever it is. The body tells you. But a lot of times we're too busy to listen. And when you learn how to be quiet, instead of this conversation going on between your ears, the inner chatter, you can actually listen to the body. Which is why we do this little training. You feel the body, you feel its sensations. If something's wrong there, you know it straight away. Which means you can take sort of some course of action, usually course of rest or exercise, to be able to look after your own body. It's amazing how insensitive people are, because they're too busy paying attention to the world between their ears. So in meditation, we learn how to be quiet. And not only do we sort of hear what our body really needs, but also we hear much more of life. We understand more of life when we're listening rather than talking. But first of all, with your relationships you have with other people, first of all, because that causes you so much strife, but it can cause you so much happiness. Why is it that people keep telling me that they cannot communicate? You need two people to communicate, one person to do the talking, which is easy to find, but you need someone to do the listening, which is hard to find. And the standard story about this, which I love repeating, when we first moved to Serpentine, we built our kitchen and dining room many years ago, I happened to be walking past the kitchen just before our morning lunch, and I just happened to look through the window, and there were, I think at the time, six, I think it was Thai girls, Thai women, they were cooking our meal for the day. It's their religious custom, making good karma. But what I was interested in was not the food they were preparing. I noticed that every one of those six women had their mouth open and they were talking. Now, because I was a scientist before, I quickly looked upon this in a very empirical manner and started contemplating, if six people are talking and there's only six people in that room, I wonder who's left to do the listening. And obviously no one was doing the listening. Everyone was doing the talking. What a waste of time that was. Now, that is just a symbol of our modern life. Everybody's doing the talking, and very few people are doing the listening. If you really want to be wise and you want to sort of get on in this spiritual world, in other words, become more compassionate, more understanding of what's going on, it's much more important to be a listener than to be a talker. Because when you're listening, you're absorbing all this beautiful information. And what do you actually hear? You can actually not just hear the words, you can hear what's between those words. You can hear the body language. You can even get the smells of that person. Whenever somebody is communicating with you, it's not just through their words. There's so many other channels of communication happening. Even like the mind-to-mind level, that's happening too. And if anybody ever thinks that monks or nuns have got psychic powers, it's nothing spiritual, amazing, or fantastic. All it is you are aware enough, silent enough to pick up more information than others and to really get to understand what a person is really saying. Not just the words, but where those words are coming from. All it does, all it means is you're very, very quiet, very silent. And I've been trying to practice that for so many years. It's part of our training. When somebody starts speaking to me, I don't prepare what I'm going to say next. I don't judge them. What a stupid question. How many times do I have to listen to this? I'm a monk. Don't they know? And I don't think like that. You're totally quiet, respectful, mind empty, with all the senses focusing on the person in front of you. So you pick up so much more. As a monk, you learn how to listen. Totally listen. Not just with your ears, but to listen with your eyes. To listen with your nose. To listen with your mind. And that total listening, you receive so much more information. You do learn to understand a person. And if many people have come and asked questions of me, or any of the other monks or nuns sitting in this spot, and if you think that we're very, very wise, that we have a lot of great understanding, it is not that we learn this in university or we learn this from books. We've had no training in those areas. Where we train is how to keep a quiet mind so we can truly listen to you when you're speaking, listening with all of our senses. An amazing thing happens when you do absorb all those that information. It's just like processed through this brain, through this mind, and answers come out, which sometimes, I must admit, surprise me. Where the heck did this come from? You give an answer which is sometimes out of left field, but it hits the spot, it's just absolutely right. The story I'm going to tell now is the story of this counsellor from the eastern states just outside of Sydney, because it's nice not to always tell personal stories. But this particular counsellor, she did this total listening once, and she was a meditator as well. And this lady came to her, if I remember the story, I remember she presented at a Buddhist conference once, and this was a story she told. She was receiving a client who'd flown all the way from United States, from California. She had so many disorders, anxiety disorder, depression, and also, you know, a few very bad cancers as well, which were, according to her doctors, terminal. She was in a physical and mental mess. And she tried to get counselors from United States, but no one had managed to really help her. And so, you know, last resort, you know, you go further afield. She heard of this woman over in Sydney. She made an appointment. She was a very wealthy woman. So she came all the way just to have this counseling from this woman. But this woman said in her presentation that she knew the background. She knew that, you know, all the usual ways of dealing with this problem wouldn't work because they'd already been tried. So she decided to do this total listening. When the woman came in the room, this is her client, the counsellor just went very peaceful, very quiet. No thoughts. Throw away all of the learning which you've had before, because that just creates more static between the ears. And she listened to this person for a few minutes as she described what was happening to her. And then when it was a turn for the counsellor to speak, she said the words came out of her mouth. Again, she didn't know from where. Said, "I think it's about time you started playing the violin again." It was totally a comment which had no connection to what had been physically said, but which caused this person to burst out crying, to weep, and her catharsis began from that point. It turned out that when she was very young, that her mother said that a girl of her social position should not waste her time playing music, even though that was something she loved, that she should do something a bit more important. And that was the beginning of her mother controlling her life, stopping her from doing what she really wanted to do. And just the very statement, yeah, you should start playing the violin again. Was giving this permission to this middle-aged elderly woman who was suffering so much from cancers and other disorders, just to be free and to follow what she really wanted to do, to unwind, to uncontrol, and just to be. And from that point on, her recovery started. It was one of those examples where, that when you listen rather than think, your intuitive powers become amazing, and you can say and do things which, again, you cannot predict, which doesn't make sense, but which really work. So a lot of times when we think too much, we don't really listen. And when we don't listen, we don't understand, and we mess too many things up. So in life, see if you can calm that thinking mind down enough so you become a great listener. Now, I'm not going to just carry on with giving all this advice without giving you a how-to. How do you become quiet and stop speaking so much, and especially calm down that inner voice? And the meditation really helps. If you come on a Saturday afternoon when we give more instructions on meditation, there is a little technique which I have developed which people found very effective to learn how to stop talking to themselves and listen more. It is using a mantra. Now, there are many mantras which people use, but here in the West, I know this is a Theravada center, this is our type of Buddhism, but who cares? All Buddhism is great, so I use the Tibetan mantra, the Om Mani Padme Hum mantra. So you say that to yourself, you chant that to yourself to try and block out these thinking, these thoughts which sometimes become incessant. But once you start that chant, then you introduce spaces between the words. Not just Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum. You put spaces, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om. And with those spaces, you lengthen them as you go on. If you find the thoughts come in those spaces, then close those spaces down until, you know, one word follows the other almost with no space at all. But as you become quieter, those spaces get longer and longer and longer. And in those spaces, you have the silent mind when you really are listening like you were just doing a moment ago. Pausing gives you the opportunity to listen. Number one, that is a very powerful way to communicate and understand other people. The people you live with, your kids, the people you work with, in your business, your clients, your suppliers, everybody you deal with. These are people you have to understand. And if you do learn that communicating skill of listening through that silent mind, it's amazing just how well you will do in your career, no matter what that career happens to be. You'll be someone who gathers information rather than just talks. You're a listener. But even more than that, once you get this great ability to listen, it's not just with communicating to others and learning where people are coming from. It's also learning again about yourself, listening to your body. You know, a lot of times when I teach a meditation retreat, I give this other little skill. And I mentioned this earlier and people were laughing, but they thought, actually, this might work. I tell people when they get up in the morning to ask your body, ask your mind, body, what do you want to do today? Mind, what do you want to do right now? It's this crazy thing to actually ask, not what you think your body should do, not what you think your mind should do, but what it wants to do. So what you're doing is you're learning how to listen to your body, to listen to your mind. and find out what it needs. Just like your body sometimes needs a glass of water, sometimes it needs something to eat, sometimes it needs to rest, sometimes it needs exercise. It's amazing. Once you become aware through listening to the body, it's amazing what you find out about your body. I do work very hard, but you know, sometimes when I have a day off, actually I ask my body, what do you want to do? You know, sometimes it says, I want to go to bed. That's what my body says. Before I say, no, you can't go to bed. You know, it's only 9 o'clock in the morning. You know, you can't go to bed now. That's what I used to do. But now I say, okay, if that's what you want to do, that's fine by me. You know, when I do that and I just have a nap at the most stupid times when you're not supposed to, when it's ridiculous, you've just slept all night or whatever. When I do that, because my body says that, I listen to my body, have a nap half an hour, 40 minutes or something, you get up afterwards, you really feel good. I mean, you really do feel like you've had a really good rest. Not like some of these sleeps, you know, you sleep because it's habit, you've got to sleep at a certain time, you get up at a certain time, you feel tired, you know, you go to bed, you can't go to sleep, you get up, you know, you don't want to get up. There's something wrong there. You're not working with your body. There's other times my body says, no, it's 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning, it doesn't want to go to sleep. It wants to meditate. Fine. And I listen to my body. And then my body becomes a friend. You know, like you may have a partner who doesn't listen to you. I know how difficult it is to live with them. Now you can understand why your body sometimes gets sick. It's throwing a tantrum. It's had enough with you. It wants to teach you a lesson. As the old joke goes, death. Death is nature's way of telling you to slow down. You have to all that time. But don't let it get that far. Listen to your body first of all. And sometimes even listen to your mind as well. Mind, what do you really want? And when you are listening to that mind, it's amazing. Sometimes it says, yeah, I really do need to think about something. I've got to work a problem. Okay, off you go. Sometimes the mind says, no, I've had enough. I just want to rest. And you give your mind that rest. Sometimes what the mind wants most of the time, it just wants a bit of respect. So I listen to my mind. And photo coming. Very good. It just wants some respect, that's all. And what respect was, it's just the mind just wants to be listened to, wants to be appreciated rather than treated as a slave. Just like you treat your body as a slave. It wants some respect. Just like you would love some respect from the people you know you work with, your bosses. You're trying your very best, but how often is it your boss gives you extra work, tells you off, look, I'm trying my best. That's sometimes what your body's doing. So I'm trying my best. Why do you keep pushing me around? My mind, I'm trying my best, you know, to be peaceful, to be happy. Just give me a break. So you do get a lot of benefit when you listen to your body and you listen to your mind and you act accordingly. And you trust that this body, this mind knows much better than you. And I said, you know, sometimes sleeping are odd days. You know, one of the biggest problems, and you know, it's being an abbot, a Buddhist monk, all these rules. Sometimes these rules, some say, you're not allowed to sleep at this time. You're not allowed to do this. Now, we've got rules. You don't have much rules. So give yourself much more of a break than we have. Ask your body, ask your mind what it needs, what it wants, and act accordingly. Be kind. In fact, I realized that was so important. Yes, we do have our monastic rules, but reading those rules and understanding them after 28 years of sometimes being a strict monk, you realize the most important rule in a Buddhist monastery is kindness. Compassion. The most important rule in the Buddhist Society of Western Australia is compassion and kindness. That's more important than anything else. And that compassion and kindness, when you listen to that and follow that, health, peace, they all come. And you become a person who knows how to listen to the world and to respond with kindness and compassion. Look, another aspect of listening, which is really, really important, which solves, again, a problem which most of you will face from time to time, is that old problem when your mother or father are there in a hospital bed, in a coma, on life support, and the doctor asks you, can I have permission to turn off the life support? And that is your mother there, the person who gave you birth, looked after you, cared for you, one of the people you've loved more than anybody else in this whole world, or your father or someone. What do you do? And it's such a simple solution. You sit next to your mother's bed and you listen. You listen, see if she's still there. See what she wants to do. I often tell people, ask that question. Yeah, your mother's in a coma. Yeah, maybe, you know, she may not be able to hear your words, but she will know your thoughts if she's still there. And you'll know her thoughts. You know what happens sometimes? You have a relation over in New York somewhere, has an accident, and you know there's something wrong right here. If that's someone you love very much, someone very close to you, you know. So you ask the question, Mum, have you had too much? Do you want to keep going or do you want to die? It's your call, as it always should be in life. It's not the daughter or son's job to terminate anybody's life. It's your choice, the mum's choice. So you ask that question and you listen. And if you've done a little bit of meditation, if you know how to listen, if you've learned how to listen, it's very clear what the answer is. And I've done that for other people many times. Many times gone to the ICU, sit next to a person, ask the question, have you had enough? There's one lady I know, actually she's a bhikkhuni now, that she was, oh, I don't mind telling this story, I think she won't mind it, that when she was interviewing me for an article in the Thai press, and she asked me that question, and said, well, what should we do, you know, with when your mother, when on someone's in a coma or euthanasia or mercy killing, you know, what should you do? And that's when I said, well, look, suppose, let's make it more concrete, suppose your mother's in the ICU in a coma, and that's when her eyes went wide, and I remember her saying, you're good. Because her mother was in ICU in a coma. And I said, look, what you should do, you should sit next to her and ask her, have you had enough? Do you want to die? If you want to die, I'll tell the doctors to turn off the machines. If you want to keep on going, we'll keep on going. It's your choice. She asked a question. She heard the result. Mum wanted to keep on living. Keep it going. And that was going on for months. And I just happened to be visiting Thailand and went to see her mum in the ICU. I asked that question for her. And the answer was very clear. She was so tired, as you'd imagine you would be. She had that Creutzfeldt-Jakobson disease. Now, part of her brain was mush. And she'd been struggling, fighting to keep alive, maybe to try and get through this somehow or other. But imagine after a while you've had enough. You're tired. It's very, very clear when you know how to totally listen. So I told that to her. And then she asked the question herself. She got the same response. And actually, they didn't have to turn off the machines because she died that night herself without the machines needing to be turned off. It's a wonderful little occasion where you could listen and you could know. That's what we mean by total listening. And also that happens, a common story which I mentioned here, your pet. Take it to the vet, and the vet comes along and says, your cat, your dog has got cancer, we have to put it down. And as a Buddhist, you know, not just as a Buddhist, as a human being, are you going to kill that animal? It's one of those quandaries people have with Buddhists, because we're not supposed to kill anybody or anything. What the heck should you do? And the answer, again, is ask the question of your cat. It's not your call, it's your cat's call. So you take it to a corner of the room and ask it, have you had enough? Do you want to go or do you want to carry on? Actually, no, she's not here this evening because she's at Bodhinyana this weekend. One of these ladies, a really sort of long-term supporter of this place, she had her little dog, had cancer, I think with her legs or something. She took it to her vet, and the vet said, look, you know, there's no possibility of it surviving. It's in pain. I've got to put it down. And she followed my advice. She took that dog to a corner of the surgery, asked the dog, and the dog very clearly said, no, no, I don't want to go. I don't want to die. And that's the message she got. She could listen and get that feeling. So she went back to the vet and said, no, I'm taking the dog home. And the vet got very angry, said, you know, you are cruel. That dog is in pain. You know, you Buddhists are so stupid just because of your precepts and your rules. You know, you're not kind. It's a bad thing to do. And she really got scolded. 6 months later, her dog had made a full recovery. She took it back to the vet, and the vet examined it. This is amazing. You Buddhists are very wise. And that's many, many times that's happened. I remember giving a talk at UWA, and at question time I mentioned that, and somebody put their hand up and said, yeah, work with my dog as well. So, you know, that's how you totally listen. Because that means you can be kind, because it's your dog's call, your cat's call, it's your mother's, your father's, whoever's in that hospital bed. It's their call. Listen to them. And for those of you who are doctors as well, sometimes you have to treat somebody. And you know how hard it is to tell you that the symptoms, they say, you know, how do you feel? It hurts. But, you know, what do you mean it hurts? How does it hurt? Where does it hurt? Around here somewhere. It must be so frustrating being a doctor when people just, they can't actually explain what's going on. It could be the whole range of pains, the whole range of symptoms. But, you know, it's so hard to describe. What does a doctor do? If they're going to be a smart doctor or a nurse, they've got to totally listen. Totally listen so much that they go very peaceful, very quiet, no thoughts, no ideas of what this person is trying to say, but what they really are saying. Feel it right deep inside. And then actually you get some incredibly intuitive solutions to the problems. You're totally listening. You get the answers. What they're trying to say, you know, is you're trying to find out what's that coming from, what they really want to say, which they can't express. That's one of the difficulties in life, trying to express yourself and trying to convey the information. You know what it's like. Sometimes we just don't have the words. Sometimes we're too scared to say what we really want to say. We're not quite sure how the other person will take it. So sometimes it takes a lot from the listener to understand what people say. Don't just expect the person to tell you. You've got to be a really, really good listener, quiet and peaceful. But also that when one learns how to develop this art of listening, it's an art of listening which comes from silence, so quiet. There's something in Buddhism which we call the hindrances. It's called the nirvana. The first two are wanting and not wanting, or desire and ill will. We say those are the things which bend the truth, and especially bend what's said before it actually gets heard, before it gets into your brain. Because you know what happens? A lot of the times we only hear what we want to hear, and we can never hear what we don't like hearing. That is also bends the truth, and it's not in anybody's interests to filter out that information. So when we do get very still, we actually let go. Those movements of the mind which filter and bend, which block out the things we don't like, and which try to emphasize and embellish, you know, what we want to hear, those are the things which disappear. And instead we actually hear what's really being said. We don't filter anymore. And that is so important. And it's amazing, just we would imagine these days that what we'd filter out all the negative things in life, but in our modern world we actually filter out the other stuff, we filter out the positive stuff. It's weird, modern people. We hear what we don't like hearing. That's why we get all this lack of self-esteem, negativity, guilt, depression. And whenever it's very beautiful, somehow or other we block it out. As that psychologist told me in Sydney some years ago, experiments prove that it takes 15 seconds for a person to hear praise. It takes 1 second for them to hear criticism. You stupid girl, that goes in straight away. You hear that. You're so kind, you're so wonderful, that's a marvelous thing you do. You don't hear that. You think they're up to something. Why is it when someone praises, we can't really hear it? So really, the bending of our ears is actually in a negative way, which is one of the reasons why people in today's world get so upset, angry, guilty, depressed, anxious, because we filter out all the positive stuff of life. So really, if you're going to do any filtering, please change the filter around, for goodness sake. If you're going to filter anything, filter out the bad stuff, the negative stuff, the angry stuff. That's what I like filtering out. That's what I keep on saying here. If there's any compliments about this evening's talk, come here. Any complaints, see our president. Where's he gone? He's run away. He's over there. So I like filtering things out. I do receive compliments. Complaints, it goes to the president or somebody else. But you can see what's doing. If you don't really do that, you take both. And when you take both, you actually become very wise in life. You're actually listening to what's really true. It's really weird when somebody actually really does praise you and they say, that's a very beautiful talk you've just given. How many people can hear that? It's a very, very kind thing you did this evening. Can you hear that? Can you listen to that? Or is there a block comes up saying, no, it can't be me? That person's crazy. They said they like me. Why does that happen to people? At the very, very least, we should be an open listener and respect the person who's speaking to us. If they're being kind, we must have done something good. Accept that, for goodness sake. So when we listen like that, we not only listen to people, but we also listen to our body, we listen to our mind. But one of the most interesting things to do is to listen to life. Listening to life is actually going through your day, instead of with like music being, you know, in your iPod, instead of talking to people, not even listening to one of my talks, which people say they listen to in their car, on the way to work, on the way back. Somebody told me today that they found out that when they listen to one of my talks in the car going to work, they actually slow down. So they complain to me, Ajahn Brahm, you cause traffic jams. Because they go so slow when they're listening to their talk, they interrupt the free flow of traffic. And I also, because they go slow when they're listening to one of my talks in their car, it means the revenue of our police department goes down because they don't catch enough people doing the speeding. But whatever happens, you know, you can actually see that instead of actually listening to, you know, even my talks, instead of listening to music, how about listening to life? A very beautiful way of just relaxing. It's just to go into a forest, into a wood, or just by the beach. And just by yourself and listening to the sound of the waves. Listening to the birds. There's always something happening in the forest. The wonderful thing is it's happening now. There's no echoes in the Australian forests. There's no echoes on the beach. Whatever sound is occurring is right dead in this present moment. Takes away or the busyness of the past and the future. You're here. And that listening gives you a sense of peace. You're listening to life as it's happening, rather than a recording or rather than a preview. It's real. And that reality of life is something which, you realize this, is where wisdom comes from. I'm actually here at last, listening to life as it happens. That gives you a lot of peace, but it also gives you a lot of wisdom too. You're listening not just to the birds. Half of you is listening to what's going on inside of you. You're listening to peace, not outside, but inside. You're getting to understand how this mind of yours actually works. A lot of times we call that the reflective mindfulness of meditation. You're not just, say, in the present moment, not just inside, not just watching your breath, you're also watching the reaction you have to these things inside. You're listening to you. And listening to how you react to things is where sometimes you get the greatest of wisdom. You see that how often that because of what we think should be and shouldn't be, how we reject some things, how we accept other things, instead of just accepting the whole lot, what I call opening the door of your heart to life. The whole of it, not just the stuff you like. And that's where this listening so much emerges with loving. To love is to listen very deeply. You love your child. You can listen to them. Listen to them say stupid things. Who cares? That's my child. I'm totally listening to you. Not judging them. Allowing everything in. And now you're listening to yourself. You say stupid things. I say a heap of stupid things. But you're listening and loving and accepting. And you're also listening to the reaction which happens inside of you. At last you find some peace, some self-respect, some acceptance of yourself. When you listen to yourself, you'll find out just how all this judgments and criticism of yourself, which goes on and on and on, how that is just totally irrelevant. So much noise, it stops. You can just listen to the peace inside your own heart, which has always been there, but you disturb it. Just like I don't know why that is. Actually, I do know why it is. When people would come to our monasteries, which are very, very quiet, I remember people coming for the first time and raising their voice, speaking louder than is necessary. And I couldn't figure out, why do people speak louder than necessary when they first come to a quiet place? Because they're afraid of that silence. Listen to it, and it will soon comfort you, and there's nothing to be afraid of. What you're listening to is peace. What you're listening to is contentment. What you're listening to is the sound of freedom. Don't be afraid of it. Embrace it. It's hard at first, because you're not used to it. You're used to talking. You're used to doing things. Now you're just silent. And you see these things. I'll finish off just with this wonderful little simile, which I often use for meditation, just to sum up what I really mean. And how, through listening, you understand. And how, through listening, you see very deeply and enjoy so much of what you previously missed. There's that old story of the Taoist master Lao Tzu, who would go on a walk with his disciples, or with one disciple every evening. And on this one occasion, he chose a new student. And he told him before they started on their walk, there was a golden rule. No one was allowed to speak during a walk with the master. And as they were walking and walking and walking through the forest, they came to a ridge in the mountains at sunset. And it was such a glorious sunset, the student forgot the rule and said, "Wow, what a beautiful sunset." He'd spoken. At which the master turned around, went back to the monastery and said, "That young man is not allowed to go on a walk with me ever again." Ever, throughout the whole of his life. And when the other students say, "That's a bit strict," it was only one word, give him a break. Anyway, what's so wrong about talking? And that's where the master said, when my student said, what a beautiful sunset. He wasn't watching the sunset anymore. He was only watching the words. He wasn't watching the sunset. He was watching the words. What a beautiful sunset. If you understand the meaning of that, you understand the power of silence. Every time you think, she's a nice girl, you're not seeing her anymore. You're just seeing the words. Every time you think, wow, that's a beautiful forest, you're not seeing the forest, you're just seeing the words. Every time you say, you know, what am I? You're not seeing yourself anymore. You're just seeing the question, not you. So, when you learn how to listen, that's when you understand. Do you understand? Thank you for listening so well tonight. So we've got a few questions from this evening's talk on listening, and I hope that satisfied the monk. Hope he was listening. Here we go. Question one. Mona from India. She asked last week. Dear Ajahn Brahm, why is my mind always wandering off to self-destructive thoughts and actions? It is because I think you try to control your mind for too long. So your mind is afraid of you. So next time you see your mind, apologize to it and let it wander off. Say to your mind, okay, mind, you can wander off wherever you want to. I'm sorry I controlled you so much. Apologize. And then you might say, well, okay. And then it will stay with you. It's like your mind is having a divorce. Question two, Jack from Perth. What happens when a person who preaches all good but does not practice what he preaches? Also, his answers do not address the questions being asked. It's really important to have, you know, what our former president said, being congruous. So as you speak, so you act. As you act, so you speak. And because I'm a very prominent speaker, I have to make sure that I don't hide myself. And so anyone who wants to see how I live, please go to Serpentine Monastery. You can go inside my cave, see how I live. You can go inside the office, you know, rummage through all the drawers, see if you can find any Playboy magazines. Actually, we call them Play Monk magazines. There's none there. You know, I'm authentic. You know, you can see me, hang out with me, find out it's true. And the answer, if they don't address the questions being asked, I remember being interested in this philosopher teacher, Krishnamurti, many years ago when I was young. And I remember one talk he gave, and it was a very famous talk. It was on an old cassette tape, I think in the New York Public Library. And after his talk, there was questions being asked, and somebody asked him a really good question. And as soon as I heard that question, I thought, wow, this is a great question. How is this teacher going to ask? Answer. And then Krishnamurti said, no, he pouted and said, do I have to answer every question? And there's the one question which was meaningful, and he sidestepped it. And I lost my respect for him after that. But I also said, well, if ever I'm going to be a teacher, you know, and sometimes I do this, you ask a question, I ask you afterwards, did I answer that correctly? Please come back again, because I may not have understood what you really wanted to say. So I really try and respect questions, and I think everybody really should. If you're a teacher of, if you're just a friend and somebody asks you a question, you don't give the right answer, then they should ask again. And say, even say you don't know is good enough. That's, if you don't know an answer, you get respected when you say, I don't know. So that's what happens, is people, they lose their love of life and their respect for one another. And lastly, Sunil from India. Dear Ajahn Brahm, when people complain or criticize, how do I ignore this and not be disturbed by the complaints and criticism? They only complain and criticize because they're crazy. Who in their right mind would complain and criticize in this world when they don't know what they're talking about? You know, sometimes people criticize me, and I haven't done it. I haven't done anything. It wasn't me, not at all. And sometimes people praise me, and I didn't do it. I don't deserve it. No, you get both. Sometimes you get criticized for things you didn't deserve, and sometimes I get praised for things which I don't deserve. So I just like water off a duck's back. What other people say, they don't know you. How can anybody judge you? So what criticism and complaint is? They just don't know. It's hard enough for me to praise or criticize myself. You've got to be incredibly mindful, have a lot of listening to know who you are and why you do things. So a lot of times, instead of complaining and criticizing others, please give them the benefit of the doubt. If they do something stupid, and they really make a silly mistake, even hurt you, just think, oh, they must have had a terrible day. Maybe they didn't really mean that. Maybe when they said, you know, you're a dog, I know they were looking at me, but maybe it was a person behind they were talking to. I don't know. Well, they may be just having a bad day or just whatever. So let's give people the benefit of the doubt so, you know, you don't get angry back. So people will complain or criticize, but you don't need to react. As I mentioned in the book which I wrote many years ago, and which I remember the former premier, Jeff Gallop, I told him this, and this is one of the little sayings he really loved. Because he was premier, you know, in the newspapers, always being criticized. Those cartoons they write about politicians in the newspapers, you know, that they're really gross, some of those cartoons. Every time you see Julia Gillard, she's got such a big bum, poor lady. Every time, sometimes it's just terrible the way they cartoon people in newspapers. But anyway, that when anybody does that, I told Dr. Gallup, said, never allow anybody to control your happiness. Your happiness is your business, not the newspaper's business, not your enemy's business. It's not the people who dislike you's business. Your happiness is totally in your power and control. They can call you whatever you like. Well, I decide I am going to take control of my happiness. You can call me a pig, the fattest, most stupid mug you've ever seen. And I would say, yes, you're right. I'm going to be happy no matter what people say. So never allow anybody to control your happiness. That's my advice to Sunil. They can complain, they can criticize, they can praise you. But I'm not going to be happy just because you praise me. You just haven't got a clue what I'm up to. I'm going to be happy myself. I know what I'm doing and why I did it. No one else does. So that way, other people's complaints and criticism is just like so much hot air. It just washes over you. If that doesn't work, you can imagine, like the Buddha said, be like a lotus. You know, the beautiful lotus flowers, it's one of the symbols of Buddhism. Because people can urinate and defecate on a lotus. But the defecation, the urine, just goes off, leaving no residue. People can pour Chanel No. 5 over a lotus. That too just falls off and leaves no residue. Praise and blame leave no residue on a wise heart. Just like a lotus, you can pee on it, you can put perfume on it, it leaves no residue. You be like the lotus, Sunil. So, there we go. Any questions from the local audience? Last Saturday, this fellow, he is very smart because you usually only get these questions from overseas. He routed his question. He was actually sitting here and he routed his question via Indonesia. So I got this question from John in Indonesia and he was actually sitting here. This is very, very smart people these days. So you don't need to do that. If anyone wants to ask a question here, please put your hand up. Yes.
Mentioned the whole idea of safety. You have not mentioned the whole idea of safety at all in your whole hour about listening.
Safety.
To be able to listen, you have to feel that you are safe. You have to allow the attention to be away from yourself. You have to have the generosity to allow the focus to be on someone else. A great deal of people in life spend their time scanning the environment for attacks. You know, we have 8 to 10% of our population has social phobic disorder. Mm. There's various other conditions like that. A lot of people are very easily shamed. So there has to be some sort of a sense of being able to relax and feel safe before you can actually really focus on the other individual. How come you didn't mention anything like that in this talk tonight?
I think one of the reasons is because, you know, I do feel safe wherever I am. Even if you're in a dangerous situation, you still feel safe. Because as a monk, you've got nothing to lose. Well, what is actually fear? Fear is losing something you're really attached to. And as we lessen our attachments, as we understand that we've got nothing really to lose, all fear really vanishes. So maybe that's because of a personal, but also, and I think that sometimes that, you know, that safety helps us speak and express ourselves. But I think for listening, even when we're afraid, we're also always listening, but sometimes we're listening in the wrong places. You know, listening to the sort of the threat outside rather than listening to our reaction inside. Because there's no real place ever you'll be safe 100%. And that's one of the great things of life. You know, the Lockerbie tragedy. People thinking they're safe in their own houses in a nice city in Scotland, and then an aircraft falls out of the sky. And it shouldn't have really surprised them, because that happens. Unlikely, but it does happen. Even right here, you know, may feel very safe here, but remember a couple of years ago, just right where you're sitting now, Thomas, the person had a heart attack and died, just right there. Do you feel safe? Of course you feel safe. So the whole idea of safety is a very interesting thing in fear. But I know where you're coming from, because I read that article, that part of the article you sent to me early about sort of learning how to try, and if you are talking to somebody, especially in a counselling position, make them feel safe so actually they can express themselves. But I think that's really about expressing themselves. Actually listening, I think, is a totally different idea. Anyway, so thank you for not having to route that via sort of Papua New Guinea or somewhere. You can do it from here. So again, thank you all for listening, and carry on listening. There's so much to hear out there, and much beautiful and wonderful stuff as well. So I'll pay respects to Buddha Dhamma Sangha, and then we can just go back and do what we need to do, whatever that happens to be.
Arahant Sama Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi Suvakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namasami Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sangang Namami